Hey everyone, what's up? I'm Rolando Noel Nieves, and I'm one of the hosts of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
Hey everyone, I'm Nick Nicole Marie Pometti, and I'm the other host of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
And every week we get together and we talk about all the tubular remakes and awesome revivals that are out there.
Yeah, and we love it when things are excellent, and we hate it when things are bogus, man.
Yeah, man. So I hope you're ready to join us today because we have an excellent podcast for you guys today.
Gnarly. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast
about unoriginality. Yeah, that hurt my voice.
Oh, no, man. I could do the whole podcast like this, bro.
Can you please?
I'm not going to, but I could.
Please.
It's just another voice that I would just do in my Dungeons & Dragons campaigns, you know?
Ooh, yeah. You should totally be like Bill and Ted in your next campaign.
I'm going to try. I think I'm going to have a Bill and Ted inspired character because...
That would be cute.
They're two cute guys.
Yeah, they are. And I think like the concept of Bill and Ted works really, really well. Except when actually put into practice. So we're talking.
It works in theory.
Yes, it works in theory. And if you haven't guessed it, we are discussing Bill and Ted. We're discussing their excellent adventure they had in 1989 and hopping over to when they faced the music in 2020. So, whoa, guys, let's like travel back in time and go back to 1989, shall we?
Whoa, Nicole, can you believe this is our second 80s movie in 2 weeks?
Whoa, man, my brain just exploded.
It's absolutely bonkers.
I think I'm throwing
in their words that they have not said there before, but
yeah, know. I wonder like how good we are. Eddie, what's our like rating on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of Bill and Ted impressions?
Six.
A six. Thank right. you, Eddie. Six.
It's better That's than good. Half. It's better, better than half. Half. Yeah.
It's above average.
I'll take it as a positive. So going back in time to 1989, the world was going to the movie theater to see films like Batman, which we discussed.
Hell yeah, Batman, mm-hmm. One of my favorite movies.
The Tim Burton, our first Batman.
Yes.
With Michael Keaton. People were seeing Look Who's Talking with John Travolta.
Wait, John Travolta was in... I'm thinking Bruce Willis. He's the voice of the baby.
Yeah, John Travolta's actually like physically in it.
And Christy Alley. How dare you forget Christy Alley?
And Christy Alley, yes.
Come on. She's like, I would say she's my favorite in that movie after the baby.
After the baby and John Travolta's after. Third?
I actually could have done without John Travolta.
I actually really love John Travolta. I've come to realize. So.
Really?
Yeah. He has a like... I don't know. He's so charming and so unique to me.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll leave that alone. Disney fans were seeing The Little Mermaid and the Disney Renaissance was beginning. Something we touched on in a minisode and we're going to be touching on in a future episode. Ghostbusters 2 came out. We discussed Ghostbusters in another episode and we might be revisiting it. What else? So many sequels. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, Back to the Future 2. I mean, you know, like Hollywood's blockbusters were all in full swing.
Right.
And in addition to it, a little movie that nobody had any faith in came out called Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Also, can you guess what movie won the Best Picture that year? You might be able to guess it.
Bill and Ted?
No. Bill and Ted won the Academy Award. It did not.
Karate Kid, part 2.
No, that came out in 86, not 89.
Was that part 3?
That came out in 1990.
Gotcha. I was a year off.
89, I was alive at this time, and so were you, actually. We're talking about times we were alive. Not this last year at the Oscars, not this past year, but the year before that. They heavily referenced this movie as a reference point for the bullshit that it was when Green Book won, or Green Book.
Okay, what was the movie?
Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, why do people hate Driving Miss Daisy?
Because
I've never seen it, full disclosure.
I don't mind it. It's based on a play. And it's just kind of like one of those movies where it's like, oh, wow, black people are real people after all, as seen through the eyes of a prejudiced white person. We like,
that's true. Okay, I see. I see. So that is literally movies. What Green Book is.
Yeah.
Green Book won the Best Picture?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. Can you believe I did not know that?
Yeah, and Spike Lee lost Best Picture twice to movies just like that. Do the Right Thing came out in 1989.
Oh, that is a good movie. What was he nominated for this year?
That year, I think that was 2 years ago.
I'm sorry, most recent.
Black Klansman was nominated.
Oh, I haven't seen that one either.
It's important to learn about David Duke, that's for sure.
I'm considering adding that to my list of movies that I watch with my friends every Wednesday.
You should, actually. Give it a shot. Yeah. So anyway, on to Bill and Ted. Bill and Ted was actually thought up of as like a skit that these two guys, the two writers of the films, Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon, it was a sketch they would perform in college for their friends and for groups of people. And it was a really successful sketch. And they decided to turn it into a script. And actually, initially, the script was kind of more about 14-year-old skinny boys who were like really into heavy metal, and like they weren't popular at school, and they were the ones who were going to end up being the ones who saved the world. But as the script came on and, you know, it became more and more of a real movie, they kind of ended up becoming these older boys who turned into who Bill and Ted are.
What came first, Bill and Ted, or I'm going to say Simon Garfunkel, but that's wrong. Mike Myers.
Wayne's World.
What's first?
Oh, gosh, that's got to be around the same time period.
Because they have the same energy.
It does. It's very much that late 80s thing. So boys must have been idiots then.
I mean, has much changed in 31 years?
Yeah, seriously. Well, I went from Boys Town in the 30s to Bill and Ted. And in the 80s, a lot of people were like, the guy who picked up the script and who wanted to make it, one of the producers of it, I think it was Joel Soysian, or I don't know if I said his name right, but he was like, people would either love this movie or it would totally alienate a lot of people because it's a very particular kind of like niche market.
This movie.
Yeah.
So when they were shopping around the script, they weren't stoners. Is that what the original script was?
Yes.
Because there was no implication that they were stoners, or did I miss it all?
I think that anyone who kind of like talks like that is kind of like implied like that, although they don't make any direct reference to.
Yeah, because they're from California.
Yeah.
I think that's just like what everyone in California sounds like.
Yeah, I think people just stereotype against them. I don't know. Like, we didn't come out in the 80s and watching it. Maybe we're just like kinder and stuff to
Eddie. Were they stoners?
I never got that impression. I just thought they were. I didn't get the impression they were stoners. Being a little kid watching this, I just thought, that's what Californians act like.
This is us Northeasterners are just here believing. It's just like, damn, Californians are
like
stupid.
Like, they're teenagers. I didn't say that, but I'm just saying them like being teenagers and that surfer life.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though they never surf.
Yeah,
and exactly. I never surf by water.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also true.
Wow, look at the way we're just like stereotype against people, but it's actually funny too, because I think time travel was a huge concept in the 80s with like Back to the Future and Peggy Sue Got Married, and yet another time travel movie comes out. But this one, that is just simply because they have to pass this history test, because if they don't, the world is doomed.
Let me tell you. Well, they didn't say that the world was doomed either, though. They kind of hinted at it, but like the stakes are relatively low in this movie.
Oh, there's practically no conflict in this movie.
Yeah, there really isn't. It's just like one scene after another. Yeah. But like overall, if you had to whittle down the plot, it is basically two kids who are trying to pass a history exam so that way one doesn't move to military school.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that is, because Bill and Ted have to be together
to save the world. You don't really find that about the saving of the world.
No, more like because the idea was that their whole process with their music will lead to the utopian society.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. No? Yeah, so Wild Stallion will unite the world.
It would just happen in the course, but if they separate, the fear is that it wouldn't happen.
Right, but
so they have to pass this history exam.
Which makes no sense in terms of time, because it's just like, if it happened, it'll happen
Why is George Carlin traveling through time to make sure that it will happen?
Yeah, did he like somehow? Otherwise, then it becomes, realize he had to?
What's the word? Then it becomes a causal, a temporal reality. I think, right? I think I use that right. That's one where, like, because George Carlin went to the past, the future can happen.
Yes.
But does that mean that the future never would have happened if George Carlin, you know what I mean? It's like one of those things. Time travel, this is our second foray to time travel after, what's it called? After Terminator, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I can't even begin to wrap my head around it because I thought that the original Back to the Future had two different theories of time travel in it. Which is like, why is he fading away if he's also the person who invented rock and roll? Like, his life is not in danger because he was always meant to go back in time.
Wow, that's actually a good point that I never thought too hard into.
That theory is like a closed loop.
There we go. That's a closed loop.
And okay. Yeah, and there are a bunch of loops and stuff, which is something that plays... I think time travel, they actually thought about it a lot more for the revival film. But in this film, they're just kind of like, they got a phone booth. Not a reference to Doctor Who at all, but they got a phone booth.
Wait, was that a reference to Doctor Who or no?
Yeah, apparently they never heard of Doctor Who and it just so happened to be a coincidence.
Ooh, Eddie, do you believe that or are you calling shenanigans?
I did. I looked it up. I was like, is this a TARDIS reference? And apparently it wasn't.
I mean, in the 80s, I can't imagine Doctor Who was that popular yet.
What are you talking? I mean...
It was around.
It was out. It was already out. I know it was out. But, like, it wasn't... I think it only got its real breath of life after the revival.
But the idea of it being something that was sci-fi significant, though. Like, Doctor Who.
Well, so Daleks, in the script...
The TARDIS and stuff.
It originally was, like, a van... And then, like, it just kind of transformed into a phone booth. And
I'm sure.
And definitely the phone booth thing works very well. Yes.
For comic effect. And I also think it's just cheaper to.
Yes.
It's cheaper to bring that around, like, different settings instead of a van sometimes.
You know? Which is probably why it's that way for Doctor Who, too. Back in, like,
I'm sure it is, you know. But, like, we're getting lost in the weeds here. So let's talk a little bit about cast, because I think cast is important for this movie.
Yes.
Starring Keanu Reeves, a very young Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. Some might say handsome, not me.
You're not a Keanu Reeves fan?
The only time I ever found Keanu Reeves sexy was in...
Speed.
It's Speed, because right he had that buzz cut. He was like in that white t-shirt all day, sweaty.
Yeah.
Hot. I hate men with long hair. Sorry, guys, if you have long hair, but you're never trying to impress me.
You're like a clean-shaven boy.
I like a buzz cut, I feel like. I like short hair on guys.
Okay.
And, yeah, I always hated this look. Never found Alex Winter attractive. However, rewatching it, he has like some sort of appeal. You know, the cutoff shirts, the mid, you know,
he's a little bit. Yes. First of all, cuz you know, I thought that was something that boys just didn't do, so seeing him rock that.
It was popular in the 80s. That was a look. I wish it's a look that would come back. I don't have the body for it, but I wish more men who had abs would show off a little bit of midriff here.
Yeah, seriously. I would love to see that more often.
It is a look, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Keanu has obviously gone on to become literally an internet sensation.
He has become. He's basically an internet meme. And a lot of his characters have been named John or Johnny.
Yes, that's true. That is so true. Was his character in Point Break, which is probably my favorite Keanu movie?
That's one of them. There's I think the most recent John Wick.
The
most recent John is actually in Cyberpunk 2077, right? That's that new video game's coming out where he's like in it, and his name is also John.
Wow, that's so funny.
There's a funny meme where it's just like, what does it mean? What does it all mean?
I don't know. A lot of people also make fun of the fact that Keanu is really famous and nobody knows Alex Winter, but essentially Alex Winter kind of faded away from acting. He took more behind the scenes credits.
Oh, really?
Later
I didn't
on,
know that. Like I know, I did see the movie that he stopped acting after.
Which was?
I think it was called Creeped.
Okay.
Freaks?
Freaked.
It's like this movie. Great prosthetics. I think the prosthetics effects were great.
Yeah.
And he was good in it. But the movie itself was just not good. But
enough to send him into early retirement.
I think it got pretty much panned by critics. But I was talking about this with actually over the weekend with like someone who is like interested in like film and stuff. Like he's like in school and stuff, and I was telling him, it was just like, you know, one of the things I respect is like when a director has conviction in their work, and like, I'll give this movie that. It, memorable because it was a bad movie, but conviction through and through, right? Like, they were committed to their work and stuff, and I appreciate that. You know, you could have a bad movie and it'll still be memorable if the director had some conviction, which is a complaint that we had obviously here in Mulan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go back and I can, episode. And here's something I could say watching Bill and Ted, rewatching it, there was conviction in this movie. Like, look, is it the best script in the world? I don't think so.
No.
Was it just scene after scene of just time travel? Sure. But the performances here from both Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter is what makes this movie.
Yeah, they have a lot of chemistry.
Yeah, and they are just so adorable together.
Mm-hmm, they are.
And this all, you know, coming in from like what we just were talking about last week with The Karate Kid, right? If you have a solid performance, right? If you have great chemistry, like that will usually help the movie.
Yeah, for
sure. And that's something that I noticed here.
They definitely seemed to have spent a lot of time honing on their characters together because like they played off each other so well. And I think that, yeah, like watching this movie, you realize how much these guys are the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not, you're not here for the script. You're not here for the visual dynamics of it. You're really here because you're charmed by their relationship.
Right.
Which is definitely one why it got a sequel, I think. And one of the best things about this movie. Back to the script, though, like we said, there's not a lot of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of just like a bunch of vignettes. How do you feel about that? Do you think it works in terms of like, because the reason they're doing it, too, is that they have to pass their history test. So essentially it's for education. Right.
Sure.
Did you feel like they got actually a sense of education from it? Like, do you think them going back in time and the way they interacted with the past? Like...
They were able to give that kick-ass presentation, right?
Yeah. That was view. That's a great way to teach kids anything,
I suppose. But... I don't know how they were able to actually teach. Like, how they were able to learn when they were, like, in these shenanigans.
That's the one thing. I'm like, how did you learn about Joan of Arc?
Like, where did you get a chance to converse with Sigmund Freud, with Joan of Arc, with Socrates?
Socrates, yeah. he didn't even speak your language. And it's like, yeah, there wasn't a lot of conflict. Like, all of these historical figures just kind of got in the phone booth and were like, whoa, gnarly, man. Which is, I think, is also why it's kind of stoner-ish. I feel like the one that we spend the most time with in terms of their past... is the Billy the Kid sequence when they're in the Old West.
But then, yeah, you're right.
Even then, they're just like, okay, Billy the Kid, you should come with us, Billy the Kid. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it would have been a little bit more engaging, I suppose, to see them like have a conflict and maybe they won't get back to their phone booth. They had to convince one of these old characters to come in. But that's, I guess, not what the movie's about. So
It's not, right. But
it doesn't have time for that.
You know what the shortest one I think was? I think Joan of Arc. I don't think they even said any words, right? Like I think they just show up
and
then they just take her, basically.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. No, wait, I thought was Freud. He's just all of a sudden there, I feel.
Yes, I actually thought, I was thinking for the wildest time, it's just like, that's not, is that Winona Ryder? I had to look it up. I was like, it looks so much
she
like did, Winona
yeah,
Ryder.
She kind of looked like her, yeah.
It's not. But yeah, I thought it was.
Yeah. They had a little bit more what?
Oh, I was going to say, what is, was this like in terms of like their careers, like, do you know if this was like their first major roles for these two actors or
I
not?
Won't, no, it's not their first. It's not their first roles, but it's definitely one of their breakout roles.
Okay, got it.
Definitely. Yeah, after this, Keanu went on to do Point Break mm-hmm. in 1991. My Own Private Idaho, I think, also in 1991. Dracula in 92. Speed in 94.
Yeah, we've talked about, if you remember our Dracula episode, I think one of the things I said about it was just how dumb Keanu Reeves is.
Yeah,
and such here's a why miscast. This...
Such a miscast. But here he's perfectly cast.
Perfectly. Perfectly.
Yeah, he's great as Ted.
And I guess the other major character that we haven't talked about, who is barely in it, he's in the bookends of the movie, would be George Carlin
as Rufus.
Rufus.
Yeah.
As Rufus.
Who literally just comes, kind of explains to them, but they, in the future, explain it to themselves better. And then that's it. He's just like, all right, get in the phone booth.
And this is when I just realized that Keanu Reeves has a penchant for just going away with men in leather jackets. You know?
Yeah.
That's a Matrix reference, guys. Come on.
I think he's just easily swayed, too.
He has that face.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, actually, the biggest character, I would say, would be Napoleon. He's the one who they kind of liked. Because a lot of the humor comes from taking these characters out of their environments and putting them into San Dimas, California in 1989. And so there's this whole thing at the mall where they all kind of like drift off and they do their own thing and they get in trouble. Ludwig van Beethoven starts rocking on the keyboards and Lincoln is taking pictures and they're like, all right, give us back the beer. And he's like, well, which doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Why would someone get in trouble for playing an instrument in the mall? Like the cop who was also Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's Bill? I forgot which one's Bill and which one's Ted.
Keanu's Ted.
Okay. So Ted's dad was the cop who came and arrested everyone, who was kind of like the biggest dildo in this movie.
Yeah, he was. He's like a dildo too.
Yeah,
like,
he is.
Yeah. And it's like, what, talk about a one note character. Also, what was up with Bill's like stepmom?
Oh god, that was so creepy.
I get the joke, but like, what is that? Seems like it's a really far out joke to throw in a movie like early on, right? Like early on.
We're talking like the first
5 minutes, like when she's picking him up, she's just like, he's just like, hey Missy. It's like, Bill. I'm like, I'm sorry, mom.
Yeah.
Like, man, mom, your mom is fucking hot. She used to be our babysitter. You asked her to prom. You know what I mean? It's just like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, how is this even appropriate even in 89?
No, so the funny thing is that as a kid, I remember a lot of like these movies about seductress babysitters. Babysitters seducing the father of the family, that kind of thing.
Not my babysitters.
And that being like
club.
I don't know, that being like a taboo thing that you would see.
It almost seems like it was like a cool thing too, or like they weren't like critiquing that, the fact that it was a really gross and creepy relationship between the dad and his stepmom. And
no, they were like a cool, I mean, they weren't thing. Critiquing it. They were kind of playing off of it. I mean, that what a creepy joke where like they're about to bang out
in his bedroom.
Although she looked scared.
I didn't see that.
You didn't see that? She looked She looked a little sad.
She looked bored.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Eddie, back to your thing about babysitters seducing things. That was that like Jimmy Buttafuoco related? Was she a babysitter?
Buttafuoco and Amy Fisher?
Yeah. Wasn't that a babysitter situation also?
I think he was just, I don't know if she was a babysitter, but they had an affair and she was obsessed with him.
Oh, okay. All right. So never mind.
Joey Buttafuoco. Yeah.
Joey Buttafuoco.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. That was such a sensation, that story.
I mean, yeah.
But I think that might have been after. Let me just see.
Oh, okay. Amy, I'm sure there probably was like a seductress babysitter.
Yeah, I think that.
Like, I'm sure there's a porn parody.
Yeah,
out
it was
there,
in 1992. Babysitter's
Club.
1992. So it was definitely after it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow, and the wife lived. That's awesome.
Yeah, she lived. I think that was. I think that was a downfall.
Yes.
Yeah.
And didn't Amy Fisher become a porn actress? I mean, girls got issues. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. In Pearl World in 1999, Fisher became a writer, a webcam model, and a pornographic actress.
Good for her. Question mark? I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. Anyway. So seductress babysitters who steal husbands and...
yeah, I mean, just the...
And more to come with that story, right?
Seriously. I mean, women's roles in these 80s movies that are mainly for boys, which is probably almost every movie that came out back then, because they weren't really thinking about representation and expanding their audience base. It's like someone could freaking write a book on it, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm sure someone has.
I should be the person to write that book, and I should do it. Maybe I'll get my PhD.
You should.
Yeah.
Yeah, write a paper on it. You know, there was also like sort of a love interest story. It wasn't even a story. It was more like
with the
princesses. It just happened.
Everything in this movie just happened.
I mean, that's the life of California. Privileged California kids, right? Things just happen to you.
I think that's also why this is a stoner movie, though, is because it's like before you know it, it's like, oh, okay, this is what's happening now. Oh, okay, I must have missed something.
I don't know. Harold and Kumar, like stuff happened to them.
Yeah, well,
that's true.
That's the idea, that the series of misfortunate events.
All right, that's also true. Because these weren't misfortunate. Actually, these were like, these pale in comparison to misfortunate events, right? I think the most misfortunate event that happened to them was when they, when the time machine broke and they were stuck in the prehistoric times.
Like, and, for like that 2 second part. Mm-hmm.
And then they fix it for like with like cans.
Yeah. Well, the biggest conflict in the movie too was that they all went to jail and then his dad wouldn't let him even in the vicinity of the jail. So, but then they changed it with like, oh, wait, let me think about stealing the keys. Oh, wait, the keys are here. Like, it's such an interesting approach to time travel. Like, I wonder if that's accurate or not.
I mean, like, technically speaking, that makes sense, right? Because what is it? So they put away the keys. They hid the keys because they hid the keys in the future, knowing that they'll find it when they need it.
Yeah.
Right. So it makes sense. It's, you know, it hurt my head a little.
But did he have to stand there and be like, think about a trash can, and then the trash can appears because
that, I don't know how that works. What is I don't know. What did he do? Like, I don't know how that one worked. There were some things in the questions of time travel here were questionable.
They just presented things to you and you either accepted it or you thought too much about it. And if you thought too much about it, you missed, you know, the next scene.
Yeah, this is not a movie you really spend too much time to think about, which is literally how I felt about the most recent one, right? Like, I was just like, there's certain points where like Eddie's just like, wait, pause it. I have a question. And I'm like, don't overthink it. Just... I mean, we just basically talked ad nauseum more so than I thought we would have of Bill and Ted's excellent adventure. I mean, yes.
I don't know. I have complaints looking at it from a 2020 perspective and, you know, somebody who like was like smacked over the face with screenwriting aesthetics. But this movie was a success. So, I mean,
how much of a success was this movie? I know like it's more of a, I know it's cult. It has like a cult following.
Yeah. I think the sequel that it had, Bogus Journey, is more so of a cult following because as many people have seen the sequel, but people who see the sequel love it. Like, my girlfriend loves it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. This movie was shot on no more than a $6 million budget and ranked in 40 million, so that's very successful.
Yeah, that is, very successful, even for the 80s.
It had, definitely.
I would say especially for the 80s.
Yeah, probably, especially for the 80s. It had television spinoffs. An animated series and a live action series. I mean, the live action series didn't have the two actors, Alex Winter, and it only lasted for 7 episodes, but it happened.
I can't believe I didn't. Did you know this, Eddie? That
I
haven't.
I didn't know this.
Wow.
Yeah. And the animated series. Yeah.
I vaguely remember the animated series.
Yeah. Well, that had the voices of Winter Reeves and Carlin in it.
Oh, really? Yeah. I vaguely remember. Like,
2 seasons.
If you hadn't mentioned it, I probably would have never thought about it again. But the fact that you did mention it, I vaguely remember like the anime. It's like
a lot of what year was it? 90s shows. Beetlejuice, which also came out in 1989, had an animated show,
which was very good.
Yeah, the Beetlejuice animated show was very good. I remember this had like almost 80s style animation, if I remember correctly. And I'm gonna Google it real quick.
It came out in 1990.
Okay, that makes sense. Bill and Ted animated. Excellent Adventures is the name of the show.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's actually more so in the vein of I remember now the colors. Actually, they really did a good job of capturing Bill.
Alex Winter and Ted.
Alex Winter.
And Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. You know, not Keanu Reeves. I don't think they don't have the right Keanu Reeves energy, but they did get a good Alex Winter energy.
Yeah.
And they gave him his cutoff.
Yeah.
What a thing to be remembered for, right?
Seriously. Also, there were 12 issues of a comic for DC Comics that Bill and Ted
really
had. Yeah,
I wonder if it's canon.
They had a video game. I do wonder if it's canon. They had a video game in 1991. They were part of Universal Orlando Studios in a Halloween Horror Nights event. They were kind of like your hosts going through the evening, so they're just kind of like They're mainstay in popular culture.
How did that happen? How did
they
become?
How is something that's just so blah and so
you know
meh?
It's so because I remember watching this movie like as a kid. Again, similar to the Karate Kid, it used to play all the time on the WB. Like, you know, either on random nights or weekends and stuff. So I remember just watching it. That's how I first saw it. And
there were
like
random
like
parts that I remembered from my youth.
Yeah,
as well.
And you know, and same thing. It's like, what's it called? Like, I if until now I couldn't probably not differentiate Bogus Journey with Excellent Adventure.
I think Bogus Journey is Heaven and Hell, which is slightly different.
Right, it is more heaven. Yes, yes, yeah. But even then, it's just like, you know, I never necessarily sat through the whole... I sat through a whole sitting once. But like for the most part, like if you had to act, I wouldn't be able to differentiate. It never... I was never one of the, you know, the people who gravitated towards this series. Mm-hmm. However, it's so interesting to know that they had like longevity like this.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, what other random pop culture icons are there that I have no idea about?
Well, it's also because, I mean, obviously it's got this like popularity that they had this revival and we're doing this podcast about it. But, you know, it's interesting because I think the idea of Bill and Ted, like I said, is really, it's a great idea and it's great in theory, not so much in practice. Bill and Ted, I think, was honestly influential to things like, you know, Beavis and Butthead and just like kind of like two dorky characters who don't even realize like how much of an effect they have on their present and their actions have mm-hmm. in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff that we can think of that like that has definitely had an influence on. And I also think that that's just kind of like that's a trope that's been around for so long, you know, even Charlie Chaplin and Abbott and Costello and stuff. Like, there's something that's works about that comedic dynamic.
Right, right.
But I think it's also, yeah, just, like, as a reference and, like, how, like, Bill and Ted's movie you kind of fondly think back to, but when you sit down, you actually watch it, it's not that great.
No, I disagree. I actually...
You disagree?
So it's not that it's not that great. It's more like, I think I had more negative reactions towards Bill and Ted watching the revival. Right, that kind of made me look at Bill and Ted as just like, oh god, now I'm remembering, it's just like, now I don't think I like Bill and Ted that much. And then when I was rewatching it, I was just like, oh, you know what, I forgot, this movie is charming. It's a very charming movie.
Should we face the music?
Let's face the music because I'm ready to like throw down at like the media critics.
Can have at it, go for it.
All right, so let's go, let's talk Face the Music.
So this movie is pretty much in direct correspondence to not only Excellent Adventure, but Bogus Journey. So right. We should talk a little bit about Bogus Journey. It's a sequel that came out 2 years after Excellent Adventure. They go to heaven and hell. They befriend the Grim Reaper and he joins their band. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just going to like, that's me just summing it up in the simplest terms.
Yeah. I mean, I think the overall plot is the fact that someone from the future goes back in time to kill Bill and Ted so that way. Because he hates the future that they created. It's like... musically progressive inspired like future and stuff, so that's why he went back in time to I think he sent, if I remember correctly, he sent robots.
Yeah, Bill and Ted robots.
They were Bill and Ted
Bill and Ted robots.
Perfect.
Well, the movie also ends with them performing this song. I think it's actually by Kiss, but they perform this song and it ends with like them being, you know, really widely praised, and a huge Wild Stallion is huge, and they pretty much fulfill their destiny. So that's how mm-hmm. we are left off within the Bill and Ted universe. Thank you very much. But apparently, according to this movie, since then they have kind of died out in popularity. Wild Stallion is no longer kind of like what they thought they would be. Like, they wouldn't mm-hmm. be as important as they thought they would be. And apparently they have not yet fulfilled their destiny.
So it would seem, yes.
So it would seem. They are approached by Rufus's daughter, who is played by Kristen Schaal.
How do you feel about Kristen Schaal?
Totally misuse of Kristen Schaal. You have Kristen Schaal. You better do great things with her.
Kristen Schaal is such an underrated comedic actress.
She's so great.
She's so adorable.
She's one of my favorite things from Flight of the Conchords, and she was so good in 30 Rock. But
and she's great in Bob's Burgers.
And yeah, she's so good in Bob's Burgers. This is one of the things where I'm just like, I kind of watched it and I'm just like, oh, Kristen Schaal's in this. Okay. And then you're like, oh, all right.
She's in it, but they're not doing anything with her.
They're really not. They kind of gave her jokes that like anyone could do. And stuff. It just wasn't Kristen Schaal.
No, it wasn't. So anyway, she's Rufus's daughter, and she explained to them that they have not yet fulfilled their destiny, and they really need to write that one song that will unite the world in 87 minutes, pretty much the duration of the rest of the movie, which is a cute little reference to, you know, movies ticking time bombs and stuff.
I kept looking at that more. It's just like, oh my God, there's 40 minutes left of this movie. Oh yeah. My God, there's 30 minutes left of this movie.
I didn't have
movie.
To look at my watch. They kept telling me. And in that time, they're still married to their princesses, who are just the worst developed characters ever. And they tried to redeem that in this movie.
Oh, really?
They don't.
You thought that they were trying to redeem them in any way?
I kind of think so, yeah. Where it was like these princesses were never worth being with Bill and Ted, so maybe they should realize that, and maybe they should steal the phone booth and search for a time where they'd be happy with these boys and never find that.
No.
But they're so, like, I don't know.
Which, that's what they were led to believe, but, like, then when... Oh, all right. Now we're getting into some spoilers.
We're
getting,
I'll go there. We'll get there in a bit.
All right.
But, so they're still married to the princesses, and they both had a daughter each. And yes. Because Bill and Ted are so much Bill and Ted, Ted named his daughter Billy, and Bill named his daughter Thea. And they're Billy and Thea.
Yeah.
And they are pretty much...
Bill and Ted.
Yeah, they're the new versions of Bill and Ted.
Right.
Played by Samara Weaving and Bridget Lundy Payne.
And this is one of those things where... Samara Weaving, I've seen her, she's great. And another one, I'm gonna take that back. No, now I'm being harsh. Actually, the two girls might have been the saving grace of this movie.
Yeah, she was good. I mean, yeah. I kind of see where you're going with that.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they were annoying, but, like, I'm not gonna blame that on them. A little bit.
Not at all. You found them sweet.
They were kind of caricatures.
Yeah, I found them very sweet. They were. Yeah.
I don't know.
And so protective of their dads.
They were. I love how
there's like this pluralness with Bill and Ted. It's like, hey, dads.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And almost, like, as if they're a gay couple.
Yeah. And it's like when we say, like, when they're trying to say, I love you to their wives, they say, we love you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which, by the way, let's talk about this. Actually, let's talk about this. All right. Why not just make them gay at this point? Why? No, Eddie. Why? So you're telling me that it would have killed Bill and Ted if they were just found out that they were in love with each other?
I don't know. I don't know if that would be per se necessary. I think it's all wrapped up, like, their bromance, the ultimate best friendship that they have, and this common destiny that is so important. I mean, they love being together. They love hanging out together.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they recognize that they have this destiny on their shoulders that they're trying to figure out at the end. It just becomes, it's not just being the Wild Stallions. It's them writing the ultimate song, the one song that will unite the world. Yeah. And now unite the realities.
Right.
Keep everything from just, like, falling out of existence.
Let's talk about raising.
So talk about effing pressure.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of stakes that were raised in this movie. We go from having to pass a high school exam to saving not just the world, but reality as we know it. All right, now here's for the hard-hitting question for the two of you guys. Do you think Bill and Ted have given each other bro jobs?
Oh, no.
No, you're not going to answer? Or
next.
No, they have not?
Next question.
All right.
Moving on.
So, yeah, so they have daughters.
They had daughters.
Despite the fact that they're possibly asexual, but okay.
And their daughters are splitting images of them, essentially. They have the same names, and they're both in love with music. And I will say, the girl who plays Billy, who is Ted's daughter, mm-hmm. I think does a great Keanu Reeves impression the entire time.
Yeah, she totally has his movements.
She does.
She does. Hair? Yes.
The hair, like, yeah. She's like... such a cutie, yeah. More so than Samara Weaving, because I think Samara Weaving is fantastic. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, yes, she's in this. But the other one kind of just surprised me more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, though, Samara was great. Do you know that the princesses are always different in the movie?
Like, I knew that they were not the original ones.
Yeah. One of them was the actress I've seen before, and, like, Glee and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jemma Mays, I think.
Yes,
yeah,
that's Jemma Mays. That's her name. Jemma May.
There's not too many other people who reprise their roles other than the guy who plays the Grim Reaper. He does reprise his role, which is mm-hmm. that's kind of nice. But the people in the future, like the great leaders, they're all brand new people. They're not the same from before. So I guess they got new great leaders. One of them being Holland Taylor.
That's the one who's married to.
That's one who's in a relationship with Sarah Paulson in real life.
I thought they were married.
I guess. I don't know. I don't keep.
They may.
All right.
Maybe they're not married, but yes, they're in a relationship. Yeah. How do we feel about that relationship, guys?
I mean, all right, just for some side cheese made for a bit. It's a pretty big age difference.
A significant age difference.
I don't know if I would necessarily be down for it, but I wish them all the best.
Yeah.
I support gays. So there's kind of two different movies that are happening, right? Bill and Ted are like, whoa, we got to come up with a song in like 70 minutes. So their brilliant idea is to just visit themselves in the future and mm-hmm. take the songs from themselves because they must have written it. Even though they also say that if you don't write that song, then the world will cease to exist in 17 minutes. So would there be a future? I don't know.
I don't know. Whatever. This is where time travel gets all confusing because yeah. it's like, how is a song not written though? If like, so here's the thing, right? Obviously, when they go 2 years into the future, the world hasn't ended. So was there a song?
Yeah, seriously. Like,
so if there wasn't the song, what are they talking about?
Unless, yeah, that was the inciting incident. And then everything that happened, I didn't think was possible. And yet that was the rest of the movie.
Was it 77 minutes? That was the future time, though, right? Now it's all making sense to me. That was not their time. That was the time in the future. They had 77 minutes of the future's timeline.
Okay, you know what? I'm just going to leave that alone.
I think that's what happened. I think they had 77 minutes in the future's timeline to write the song.
We only got 4 minutes to save the world.
You know, because you have, because basically, like, let's say right now we've been recording for about 45 minutes, right? In our 45 minutes, though, there has been an infinite number of pasts going on. But there's only 45 minutes of this present.
Oh, something. I see. But then okay, would there be an infinite amount of futures as well?
Theoretically possible. However, you know, you had to. We're looking at this one timeline. Oh my god, I'm like a scientist.
So while Bill and Ted keep visiting themselves 2 years in the future, 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future, their daughters are like, okay, well, all they need is a really great band. So let's go back in time and get some of the best musicians to join their band. And they go mm-hmm. back and they get Jimi Hendrix. They get Louis Armstrong, Wolfgang Mozart, and Ling Lung, and some guy from Grum. From
I think it was a female.
Female.
I mean, yeah. I don't know if that's a real person or not.
No, I don't. I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I don't think that was. I think that was just a made up
thing. I think that was a made up thing. Yeah.
But I think the thing is that each one is inspired by the musician before.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, and so who was their influence and who was their influence and stuff. And that was cute.
A lot of lack of Latino representation up in this bitch, but whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Just like, what? There's
They couldn't get back and get Celia Cruz? Like, what?
Yeah, you couldn't get Selena? Oh my god, Celia Cruz would be great.
She would have been great, yeah.
I'm just saying, there's plenty of Latin stars you could have, like, reached out to.
Yeah, seriously. But that's what, you know, whatever. Yeah.
So, I really enjoyed the scene with Jimi Hendrix and, was it Mozart? Who was it?
Wolfgang Mozart. Yeah, that was Mozart, right?
Yeah,
or Amadeus.
That was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. That's the same person. Yeah.
Oh, wow! I didn't know.
That's his full name.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really enjoyed that scene. That whole back and forth that they did.
That was actually cute. That was a very cute scene. Actually, yeah. Most of the scenes that worked in this movie tended to revolve around the music and the girls.
Yes,
I would agree.
Even though by the time they got to like Ling Lung and Grum, they were just kind of wrapping it up, and I did want to see a little bit more there. I think those are my favorite scenes. I actually have a favorite character in this movie. It's that the Terminator.
The robot. Really?
Dennis? The floor laughing with his scenes. I thought he was hilarious.
I was so over that robot. Like,
are you kidding me? That was great comedic timing, especially when he like zapped them and he was like, oh my god, I was on the floor.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That was good comedic timing. That was a good moment where like he zaps the wrong people and he's just like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I was so tired of that robot so quickly.
I think my favorite enjoyed him in hell.
I think my only favorite character might have been not my favorite character, but my favorite like ancillary character was probably Jimi Hendrix. I think so. And I liked his scene, for example, with Mozart. But I also loved the scene where I'm sorry. What was the other who was the musician that inspired him?
Louis Armstrong.
Louis Armstrong. Yeah, Louis Armstrong. When Louis Armstrong, like, kind of performed for him, that was, like, kind of a nice little scene.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Because these are also, like, these are historical figures that mm-hmm. I feel like people, especially Jimi Hendrix and Louis Armstrong, you know, they're more accessible for audiences. You know, people have really, I think, strong relationships with Jimi Hendrix and Louis Armstrong. And even Mozart. Everybody knows Mozart songs.
Yeah. No, I would agree.
So it was, like, that was something that I think was really really fun to watch, you know, kind of almost like a Midnight in Paris-esque thing where it was like, oh, if only, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so to sum it up, spoilers, Bill and Ted, while on their journey, realize that the people who are actually supposed to perform the song and unite the world are not the Bill and Ted themselves, but Billy and Thea, their daughters.
At what point did you realize that?
I realized it when they realized it.
Oh,
but I did.
Shame on you.
I was half paying attention.
Oh my god! Shame on you.
I think we figured it out pretty early, right? I would say like 40-minute mark.
I was really hoping because I was already noticing that the future was women.
That yes,
was just you know? True. That yeah. was so
that was kind of like evident, and there's also the point too is like the point that when they stop cheating. You know, trying mm-hmm. to get the song from the future, and the moment that's when things started turning for them.
Yeah, too. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's so important too. Like from all the movies, is like they may be like goofy morons, but they're totally sincere. And there's always like this big life lesson that they learn in their time traveling adventures that makes them better.
Yes, I actually do agree with you. I will say that's the one thing I may. Did enjoy about this movie, right, was the fact that there is a preciousness to Bill and Ted, mm-hmm. right? They're very wholesome and innocent, which is why I don't think that they're potheads, right? I actually, and they yeah. even made a point where it's just like they were alcoholics in the future, right, in the darkest timelines, but they're like, you know, the present, their present selves were just like, but you don't even drink, so it's yeah. just like I yeah. so clean, I just think yeah. I think they're just brain dead, you know.
They're yeah, they're just yeah. It's like Dostoevsky's The Idiot. Do you know
yes.
that? Where uh-huh. yeah, where it's just kind of yeah. like someone who's this pure can't mm-hmm. be anything, can't be smart and all this stuff. So
right, but actually, so which brings I guess my next question I have for everyone here is like, all right, so this is Bill and Ted though, right?
Yeah.
You talked about the movie itself. What did you feel about Bill and Ted in this movie?
Their performances.
And that could be performances. That could be character. It could be a mix of everything. What? Because I have here opinions, and this is where...
Well, so in terms of screenwriting, I guess, you know, it's early on established how much, like, there's this whole conflict about them. Like you said, there's this pluralness to them when they go to therapy with their wives. You know, they don't know how to separate themselves from each other. They mm-hmm. think of each other as one, right? And that they're... But we are together because we have to save the world, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes on that they actually don't. to save right. the world and all this stuff. So that also kind of felt like, okay, so what are they supposed to realize from their own relationship, right? And did mm-hmm. they realize anything? And that was one thing that I thought that was planted that wasn't necessarily delivered on
mm-hmm.
for me. Okay. Because it's also kind of like, you know, facing the idea that everybody knows of Bill and Ted. They're Bill and Ted. It's not Bill and it's not Ted. Right. And I expected it to go in that direction. And it didn't. And I wasn't like, okay, whatever about it. But it just kind of felt like if you were going to set the daughters up to be the heroes and maybe have planted that in the beginning of the script somewhere, I didn't really see that planted at all.
I mean, the movie didn't even give us an all is lost moment, right? Where
yeah.
their friendship does take a moment, where the friendship does take a hit, right? And that mm-hmm. would be a source of conflict, right? I think the closest we got to that was when they were trying to convince Death to join the band again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It really makes me question... I'm so sorry. I was just going to
say... No, go ahead. No, finish. Go.
It makes me... Because the film was written by the men who wrote the first two screenplays, Chris Matheson and Ed Solomon and stuff. I think the only other movies that we might know about them is Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Babysitters, what's going on? Samara Weaving, the babysitter. Oh my God. Theme of the friggin' episode.
Whoa.
Someone
is obsessed with babysitters.
But, I mean, these guys, I feel like maybe they, you know, might have to study 8-point story structures because their screenplays are just kind of lacking certain beats and whatnot. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, so my biggest qualm, I think, with this movie was I did not like the lack of growth between Bill and Ted between mm-hmm. these movies.
Mm-hmm.
That they were just like literally Bill and Ted from the early 90s, right? Late 80s, early 90s. And for me, that's kind of a failure, because either you play on that or you figure out how to make them grow up, right? We talked about this with Karate Kid here, right? Where Joey Lawrence was kind of just stuck in his old ways, right?
Yeah.
But the show plays with that and they use it to comedic effect.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe not the best jokes here, but they work. They kind of just like, oh, isn't this funny? Like trying to like bring them back into like kind of bring them to reality.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like that here, right? Like Bill and Ted are just like Bill and Ted, and they're just, there's no, it just felt like I was watching these
again,
lack
of conflict,
but like,
yeah,
and it was just like, it was boring. So basically what I felt when I was watching the movie is just like, I've seen this before. There's been no growth in this series in 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been really successful instead of them just going constantly into the future to visit themselves. What if after they found it out, the stress got to them, they had a big fight, and the whole movie was them trying to like come back together.
Mm-hmm.
Like this whole like, okay, you know, Bill and Ted need to do some time apart in order to come back together again. That would have been mm-hmm. so much more, I think, rewarding to
yeah.
see after 20 years.
And they, and now you give the girls a little 30 years, yeah. And then you give the girls even something more to do, right? Because
yeah.
now not only are they putting the band together, they're trying to put like Bill and Ted back together.
For sure. I totally agree. It just kind of feels like, yeah, like to me, like, okay, they set up one thing in the beginning and then they deliver on a completely different storyline. It feels like the same issues with the first script, which in a weird way is like, oh, well, it's nice to know some things haven't changed.
Well, the charm worked in the first one. I don't know if the charm worked here.
Yeah, everything else was improved, right? The visual effects were improved. Uh-huh. Like, you know, like it felt like the story was going to be like a better told story, and it just kind of wasn't.
I guess I still don't know how to feel. I don't know how to feel about Keanu Reeves repriving this role that hasn't, it's just like, I don't like, I've seen Keanu Reeves, right? And it's just like the fact that like it felt like regression.
Oh.
I can't say anything about Alex Winter here, right? Because Alex Winter, we haven't really seen anything from him.
Yeah.
So Alex Winter was giving it his all, I guess. But like, I'm not accusing Keanu Reeves of feeling this way, because I think he's been very passionate about this project.
Mm-hmm.
He's been trying to get this project off the ground for some time, from my understanding, right? But it just felt like he still was phoning it in. There was like, I don't know, the chemistry was a little off. I just think maybe it's also just seeing, you know, these two older guys who are clearly older trying to play like these younger roles. It was kind of, there was something jarring for me, and
yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not an ageist, guys.
Maybe, I don't know. I think something in the...
I sounded it.
You sounded ridiculous.
We were talking about this relationship.
I think maybe the disconnect in the storyline just played into like the chemistry and the acting and affected the entire movie.
Yeah.
Because there definitely was, I would say, a disconnect that I kind of felt. In the sense where it was like, I'm not sure if I'm 100% behind this plot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if either I believe it or if I am like in it. Like, you know, like I'm not getting caught up in it. I'm not rooting for it. I'm not feeling anxiety or suspense from it.
Right.
And I'm just I'm just simply watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. You were just going through the motions.
Yeah.
And now, so here's where I'm ready to just throw at movie critics, right?
Here
this
we go.
This movie has a 70-something percent rating. It's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. And I don't know how that rating came to be.
Well, like how many ratings? 10? I mean,
no, like 100 or something,
no,
right?
Well, I'm reading articles how people love this.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
How they are surprised, like the producers are surprised. They just thought that really it's going to be done really well. It's going to do really well just with the cult following.
Huh.
But it has done well outside of that range.
I'm looking it up right now just so I can get some accurate
feelings. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Hocus Pocus came out in theaters, guys, again.
Really?
Yeah. And who's going in theaters? I don't know. You shouldn't be, but it is out there. Bill and Ted Face the Music. 82% out of 227 reviews counted.
Wow. Right? Owen Gieberman said, on a scale of 1 to 10, I wouldn't say it goes to 11, but it's a most excellent sequel.
I genuinely feel that critics were starved for any content, and this is what they deemed.
I don't think it's any content.
I don't know what so when I saw the reviews, right, I was actually excited to go watch this movie. Like, oh, this movie's got good reviews. I guess it'll be enjoyable. And then when I was done with it, I'm just like, oh, this is not. This is quite, it was a little, it was only an hour and a half. It felt longer.
Yeah, it did.
And it's not a good sign. And I'll say this right off the bat. Like, I've admitted this. Well, when we were recording this, I was never like a diehard Bill and Ted fan. So yeah. I wouldn't call myself part of that fan base. I enjoyed their movies, and rewatching it, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot. This movie is good. However, I should have still enjoyed this movie, and I didn't. And I don't know what critics see in it. Am I blind? I think Bill and Ted is fine on its own. Bogus Journey, I don't remember as well, but, like, you know, you said that it has a stronger fan base than, like, the original one. So I would say it's just like, no. When I was finished with this movie, it was just like, I did not need to see this. It gave me nothing new outside of the two girls being Bill and Ted also.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just felt like half-assed. It's like one of those things where I was watching what I've seen already.
So was this film needed? It didn't make me look at the old thing. Like, it didn't make me look at Excellent Adventure any differently. I wasn't looking at it with, like, a new pair of eyes or with a new, like, perspective. It was just kind of nice. Like, oh, if they had girls, maybe they were the ones who were, you know, meant to write the song or something. Like, that's a nice thought. But, yeah, no, wasn't needed at all. It was...
Yeah, I mean, quite the opposite for me, where it had the opposite effect, right? It didn't make me want to watch Bill and Ted. It made me think, it's just like, wow, I must not have liked Bill and Ted then.
Yes, there you go.
There's anything like
there
it.
There you go.
I must not have liked Bill and Ted, and I kind of don't want to rewatch it. And then rewatching, I'm just like, oh, no, I forgot. This movie is cute and enjoyable.
Well, I watched Excellent Adventure first, and I was kind of just, like, sitting there, and I was like, okay.
You know me. I like to go the opposite.
Yeah, you go back in time.
I go back in time, yeah. I travel through film.
He really does. Well, I jumped forward to this one, and I mean, after it was done, like, I kind of just turned to my girl and I said, I don't even know what I just watched, you know, like,
I just, how did she feel about it?
She thought it was stupid. We don't, like, that's the thing, like, we couldn't really talk of, like, what we got from it, you know.
And she was a fan.
Yeah, and she loves Keanu. Remember, she's obsessed with Keanu.
Really?
She loves him.
Why?
Don't judge, okay?
I'm asking why.
He has a huge fan base. People
he
love
does.
Keanu.
He does. I know that he's, like, a good guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are charmed by the fact that there's a lot of reports about him being a good person.
Which is great.
Yeah. Which is great. That's cute. That's good.
I will never forgive him for giving us The Lake House, so.
What? That endearing movie with Sandra Bullock?
You call that endearing?
I love it.
It's about
it's another time travel movie.
Time travel oh movie. Damn, yo, he loves that stuff. Where would you rank this on your list of time travel movies?
Bottom.
It wouldn't even make the top 10.
I mean, I can't say that there are 10 movies.
Is it in your top 10 80s movies of time travel?
What is it, mine? Do you know why? Because this is one of the first time travel movies that I remember being, when it's like time travel fun. Where they're like having fun. It's like, it's fun. It's just like getting historical characters for a history exam. You know, it's like an oral history presentation. So it's like, it was fun. It wasn't like dire.
Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't like Back to the Future.
It didn't give that, even though in this it's about, like, making sure that reality all stays together, but at the same time, even when you're in hell, it's like it's not dark.
Yeah
I
got you.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
Yeah, that's actually true. Thank you. That actually reminds me, right, I know we mentioned about the stakes of this movie, but, like, that's also indicative of, like, the movies that are just being produced nowadays. Like, one of the things that you're told when you're writing a screenplay is you need to inject conflict. You need to give
people some stakes.
Yeah. And the stakes that like all writers have been going to nowadays is the world is going to end. The universe is going to end.
Yeah.
It's always something so big, which is, again, this is why I think the first one works. At its core, it's about passing a history exam.
Yeah.
Karate Kid worked because this is high school drama. Even Cobra Kai works because it's high school drama, right? When the stakes are so big that like only a superhero can take care of it, it's just like, what? Who can relate to that, right? When I watch a superhero movie, I'm watching superhero, it's fantasy. It's you know, superhero shit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more and more movies are kind of going this route of like having to save the world, and it's so annoying because just like, why can't you just give me like a small, give me a small story, just give me a, there's nothing wrong with small stories.
Well, all these movies have superhero movies to compete with, so they think they have to go that route.
I guess
just that, like, you'd be real competition if you don't go that route,
because
then you're giving me something different.
We're starting to sound so, I'm starting to sound more cynical than I've ever been when it comes to movies, because I love, I watch movies for entertainment, and it's just like, I guess my godfather warned me about this, right? Because I had asked him once, he's like, why do you think critics are so mean to movies? And he's like, they've watched so many movies that they become so angry, and that's what's happening to me.
Yeah, isn't it the worst?
So, yeah, you've seen like, you've easily seen 3 times as many movies as I have in a lifetime, I'm sure. And I'm sure that you must be so, that I can only imagine why you're so critical of new movies.
Yeah, no, new movies are, I don't like them.
But I think that's really, I mean, that's all I have to say on Bill and Ted. I don't want to go back in time and see if I had any notes that I forgot to bring up, so.
Yeah. Let's just leave it in the past. We'll
leave it at that, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but let us know. Have you guys spent money on Bill and Ted?
Mm-hmm.
Did you like the original one? Are you a bigger fan of the sequel? Did you want us to talk about the sequel and upset with us because you didn't? Let us know. Where can people let us know, Nicole?
Email us, remakesreboots@gmail.com. Hit us up on Instagram @remakesrebootsrevivals. Shoot us a message at Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsandrevivals. And you can find us at Twitter @remakespodcast.
And like I said, yeah, Remakes Podcast. you can, yeah, and I've been keeping up to date with current events in terms of the industry stuff. But yeah, you know, remember, you can always check us out on our website, remakesrebootsrevivals.com.
Awesome.
And I think, oh, if you follow us on social media right now, you will be seeing a big push on our Halloween spooky content.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have so much of it, which I'm even realizing it.
We do, yeah. So we want you to back and listen to some of our fun. People love indulging in Halloween-themed stuff during the month of October. So definitely go back and listen to some of our Halloween-themed episodes. And the guide to those are on our Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, and... we are excited because we have a few Halloween episodes coming out towards the end of this month.
So
stay tuned for that. Uh-huh. We are promising you it right now. Hopefully we deliver on it.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That's why we're not going to name it. Because then
we're not going to say what. So that way, in case we change some things up, it'll be this is what we were planning all along. Wink, wink, guys. I think with that, that's all we have really left today. Nicole, anything else you want to say? Do you want to go back in time?
No, this has been most excellent, and I am okay to leave it at that.
This has been a bogus. I lost my train of thought on that one, but I had nothing else to say except that I'm Rolando. Oh wait, no, we already did that. How do we close? I'm like brain dead, like they are right now.
Yeah, seriously. So how about we just stay in original?
That's right. Stay. Thank you.
Stay in original.